When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Wind Up.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte, skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I'm joined once again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville.
Yeah.
So, Doug, big day around here, man. Your first Starkville day game after a Sunday night game on a different coast, meaning you're getting off your first red eye of the season.
Yes.
How red would you say your eyes are?
Well, I have to commemorate it, but I can't see. So, once my vision comes back, it's deep out there. But it was fairly smooth. I bought this new, you know, not that we promote products or anything, but anyway, I bought this new sleep collar. I think it's called an ostrich pillow or something, and it kind of wraps around your neck. Pretty good. I slept and, you know, from, where was it, L.A. to D.C., got into Connecticut. That was it, man. So, pretty delirious, but that's all right. You know, delirium is part of the Sunday night experience. Great game. Yeah. Cardinals, Dodgers. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you should have taken that nonstop from LAX to Starkville International Airport. You'll have to see if you can figure out what the actual schedule is for that flight, because it's a little murky.
Well, Starkville jets are private jets. But somehow when I landed in Starkville, I could be 1,000 miles away from home. I just don't know.
Just try to stay awake through the whole show if you can, because it's going to be great. Joe Maddon will join us to talk about Shohei Ohtani, the Angels, and whatever else is on Joe's mind. We have some opening day strange but true history you won't want to miss. And we have our first trivia question of the regular season with a new twist. What could possibly go wrong there? So now that we have all that out of the way, let's get into what should be an incredible show. Let's welcome in this week's special Starkville visitor. He's been here a lot. We love it anytime he stops by. It is Joe Maddon. Joe, thanks for making your way back to Starkville.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, and I enjoy it, and it helps me or makes me better at doing this, so I appreciate it.
Wow, you make us better, too. And you've been here so much. Is it true you no longer need a GPS to find your way around the nooks and crannies of Starkville?
I hope not, although I think it'd be wise always to travel with one.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're putting in a golf course, so we're good.
Yeah, okay. We'll put it in
there for you. Going great.
I'll be there soon. Yeah, I'll be there soon.
All right. So, Joe, let's start here. You spent three seasons around Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter, Ipe. So I know you're aware there's a little Ohtani news. Can you describe your reaction when this story broke?
I was upset, quite frankly. I just didn't want to believe it. I can't believe it. So I was upset. I mean, people around me, I was noticeably agitated by the whole thing because there has to be some truth there, obviously, but I didn't like the idea of you know, the Ipe, because Ipe and I had such a good relationship too, conversed daily. He was my liaison, my connection to Shohei through language, and every day it was like, about the next day and how's he feeling? What can we do here? and in during the game, making sure he was kept abreast of different things. So I've you know, had a great relationship with the guy. And of course, Shohei, same thing. But I mean, Ipe was the conduit. So when I read all this, heard all this, I just did not want to believe any of it. The fact that Ipe would be disloyal to Shohei was like really a thought that I cannot even fathom, and never even imagined that Shohei would ever bet on baseball, let alone anything. So it was just a lot of unbelievability about it. And I was upset. I was viscerally upset about the whole thing.
Yeah, I can only imagine. How would you describe the relationship between Shohei and Ipe?
Best friends. That's what it looked like. We all had best friends in our life. The guy's my drinking buddy, although I don't know that they ever went out drinking. I don't even think they went out hardly at all. But he was his best friend. That was my perception, beyond being a business associate, being his interpreter. They came across as being best friends. They're inseparable. So that was my interpretation. And again, I mean, that's being at the ballpark, that's seeing him on a bus, seeing him in, you know, in a hotel, whatever, on an airplane. So I never got to socialize with them to understand exactly to the extent, but inseparable. Always seemed to have a good rapport, easy conversation. Never seen either one agitated around the other. So again, for all those different reasons, difficult to understand this.
So, you know, Joe, can you speak to maybe the challenges or the circumstances by which you're trying to kind of connect with a player, a team, mm-hmm. as a team building component, mm-hmm. but you're dealing with also languages, like language barriers. And, you know, so that dynamic between trying to build that relationship, but also have this conduit translator, I mean, how did mm-hmm. you sort of navigate that? And did you feel it was, you know, something that was a barrier or something that you had to continue to work with?
I never, the word barrier to me is like really strong. So I never thought of it as that way. You know, slightly, I guess, inconvenient because you had to go through these channels all the time and just couldn't converse with the player himself. But I never, going into it, you know, that's the way it's going to be. You know, I've had Yu Darvish. I've had other players in the past, Aki Iwamura back in the day with the Rays. So I've gone through the Asian player before. So it's never been obtrusive. It's never been difficult. Never thought about it a whole lot because, Shohei tries to speak English. Yu Darvish speaks great English. Aki was attempting to get better at it. I had Jae So, a South Korean fellow, a couple years ago. So I've had this. And, you know, there was never really that issue. You always would kid around with them, attempt to speak English to them, and get them to understand. A lot of joking around, you know, the stuff that happens when you just don't really speak the other person's language and you're trying to almost play charades to get your point across. So that was never, I never even thought of it as being a negative, and it wasn't a barrier. And I thought we were on a pretty good communication route, regardless of the fact that I didn't speak Japanese. He didn't speak much English.
You know, Joe, I've known several translators, interpreters in my years in baseball. I'm sure Doug's the same, mm-hmm. and you've been around them. I don't know that people on the outside mm-hmm. understand how unique that relationship is. The interpreters that I've talked to always spoke about how the player leaned on them to do so much more than just mm-hmm. take our questions and translate them into English. They really depend on them in their lives. Am I depicting this correctly?
Sure. And even when it comes down to the interpretation of what the player said, the interpreter, I think, has a lot of latitude regarding making yes. sense of what he had said or putting it into a language that is presentable in a sense to the reporters. So he's almost speaking on behalf. It's almost like he's translating. He's translating what he said into English, of course, and then translating it further. Everybody understands the gist of what he's trying to get across. And beyond that, ordering food in a restaurant, driving him somewhere. I don't even know if taking the laundry out and back. I mean, there's a lot going on there. Sort of like a butler, I guess, of sorts, you know, in that regard. And then a confidant and a trusted advisor. Because I would think I'd have to have full trust and faith in this person if I did not speak the language. I'm really at his mercy. Again, too, like, if I say something to you and you have to interpret it to whomever, I got to trust that you're going to say what I said. or at least clean it up a little bit so that these people understand it. So there's a lot of that stuff that I guess nobody really considers. And of course I do, and I understand it. And again, it just speaks to this extremely high level of trust that the player has to have in an interpreter.
Yeah, and did Shohei have other people around him to just handle all the stuff just so he could pay attention to baseball?
It was always Ipe. I never saw, I mean, other than Nez, you know, his agent, I had a great relationship with Nez. They would sit in the box at Anaheim right there. I'd often go over and speak with them. There was different things. I was trying to include him with, like, even foundational-wise, you know, and I would talk to Nez about that too. So had a great relationship with him. I mean, he was obviously active in this too. I don't think anything went to Shohei via Ipe, but didn't go through Nez also. So it was a well-oiled machine. I never thought twice about it. It seemed to be working extremely well. Who would have thought gambling would become an issue in this relationship? Last thing you would expect, I think. I mean, the fact that Ipe, although, again, with the way it's the ubiquitous methods of gambling today, and I'm not a fan of any of that, by the way. I think it's wrong. I don't like what we do at all as a society, and especially in sports. So maybe it was just a matter of time something like this would pop up.
Boy, that's an interesting topic. We should put that aside and get back to it. But okay. I guess here's my last question down that line of thought, because I've been trying to think this through. Mm-hmm. So if you have if Shohei has Ipe, he's his friend, he's his trusted advisor, they're basically inseparable. Is it conceivable that somebody like that could potentially have access to your bank account to pay your bills? I know we're going someplace that's a little touchy, but just in general, does that seem feasible? Because it does to me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like, for lack of a better term, his wife, you know, taking care of the economics of the house. I absolutely can see that as being part of it. And that's not a stretch for me. The part that's somewhat of a stretch is the fact that it would get by Nez somehow. You know, those kind of transactions would not, the agency would not be aware of that. That's the only part that's incongruent with all of this. But easily that Shohei would rely on Ipe to handle like daily bill paying, whether it was via Venmo or PayPal or a check. Who knows? I don't even know. So that to me is not a reach by any means. The part that I don't quite understand is the fact that, especially when you talked about those numbers, if they are accurate, that the agency would not have known about that too.
So John, I'm wondering about, like, if, you know, it's looking ahead, we know the importance of a translator and not only just language, but it's also an athlete being able to communicate in a tongue they're comfortable with, right? Even if you are fluent, say, in English, your native tongue is something else, and you just, the phrasings and communications and the trust that flows through it. Is there a concern of the overcorrection that could happen, right? Because you could see now like translators being screened and all these things. And sometimes that will sort of go against the relationship that's required, because as you mentioned, it's more than just taking one word in Japanese and putting it in English. So I'm curious if you thought about what the overcorrection would be, what's the concerns about where we go from here if all these worst case scenarios turn out to be true.
Right. I'm so not into the overcorrection, but you're probably absolutely right. Maybe who knows, with AI becoming more prominent, maybe just a robot's going to be the interpreter from now on. Yeah, that is always a concern. I want to believe, I almost believe, especially because it happened, the next interpreter is not going to go tread in that area. I mean, the financial benefit to these guys is incredible. The perks are incredible to these guys also. Why would you jeopardize such a high-paying, high-profile job and to lose it over something like this, as an example? But then if you're going to overcorrect, what would be the other areas or examples where there might be an issue? Is it drugs? Is it, I don't know. I'm just threw that out there. But what would be the next thing where the overcorrection has to be aware of to help prevent it in advance? I don't even know. And nobody saw this one coming, absolutely. So I'm not an overcorrector. I want to believe this is going to be a one-off for a long time. I have to believe it's one of those things, lessons learned. I mean, people that are watching that may be employed in this position in the future, kind of learn, everybody's going to learn a lesson from this, I want to believe. I don't think that's naive either. So I'm not into an overcorrection. I believe this will correct itself. And moving it down the line, I just think whomever is hired as this guy, there might be more of a vetting process. Because part of what I'm reading about Ipe, all the stuff out of his past, Riverside, and all the different interpreting work he had done with different organizations, they're saying was not true. That part bothers me a lot because I didn't know that, and that shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Boy, I mean, you've raised a lot of questions. And when Shohei spoke last week, he left so many questions unanswered. So I'm curious, what's the biggest question that you have that you would like to ask him?
Well, there's only one question to ask, and I think he would answer it truthfully. Did you know anything about this? Did you know about his betting habits? And if you did, why didn't you try to stop it? Something like that, to that effect. Because I don't believe, I don't believe that Shohei was a gambler in any way, shape, or form. And if he did, because listen, the guy's kind of isolated all the time, right? I mean, what do you do to entertain yourself if you don't go to a nightclub, to Ruth's Chris, you know, or a concert? If you don't do any of that stuff, what do? To entertain yourself, you just watch ball games or whatever. So I would just be curious as to where do you park yourself for entertainment value, right? So that part of it, that's the one part of it I thought. And again, if he did, there's nothing illegal about gambling on basketball, whatever. That's the whole world's doing it. I mean, to even for anybody to be like surprised or concerned or upset, I wouldn't be. Just the fact that he would not bet on the game itself, that's the only concern that we would have. So just that, how much did you really know? Did you know about the debt? And in any way, did you help pay for it? That's all. I mean, otherwise, and then, of course, you just straight up, did you ever bet yourself on anything? You would ask that question, I believe. And that's it. I mean, I don't know that anything else is pertinent until those questions are answered.
Yeah, let's think about impact and start with Shohei himself. Mm-hmm. All of this broke before he'd ever played a game in LA for the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. How could this not have pushed him so far out of his comfort zone again before he'd ever played a game in Dodger Stadium?
I think part of it, if he really is innocent, which I believe he is, I think he can compartmentalize. I mean, he's done that every day that he plays baseball. I mean, this guy's the most the largest attraction in the game, practically of any sport right now. I mean, Tiger Woods is not playing, you know, as an example. Brady's out. Messi, the soccer player, whatever. But who's more attractive internationally than Shohei is? You know, we all made the rock star comparisons. I think they're adequate or appropriate. Whether it's the Beatles or the Stones or whatever, I'm going to go into my generation. I mean, as opposed to the newer artists of today that I don't really pay attention to as much. But he's all of that. He's all of that. Every bit of that. So there's a lot that we don't quite understand to walk in those shoes. But you have to be able to compartmentalize, I think. And you have to be able to put it behind you, move forward. And furthermore, he's going to have a lot of support. Because I believe he did not do any of this gambling wise. A lot of people are going to support verbally to help him just move it along. And I'm certain he's going to have some moments of doubt that you have to have the right advisor with you to listen. He has to have somebody to really listen to him right now. His wife, I've never met. Maybe she's really good at that. There's got to be an inner circle that he's able to unload on, that's able to give him information or comfort in a sense that permits him to park it and move on and be the player that he is.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
Yeah, and what about the impact on that team moving forward? You were such a master at building culture on the teams you managed. And let's think about this team. We know there's more coming. We have three investigations going on into it that we know of. So there will be leaks. There will be revelations. There will be questions, and that means people like me will be asking those questions, and not just to Shohei, but to the players on that team. So does that have the potential to become a thing for the Dodgers?
It does, but I do believe the Dodgers are built for chaos. I mean, they're actually created to be chaotic, right? I mean, so I actually, this could be something they could actually feed up and galvanize over something like this. I do believe that. Then it's a matter of the rhetoric you create or energize among the group, us against them, if that's going to be the case. And it's going to be the case regardless. I mean, they're almost like they put themselves almost in vintage Yankee mode right now, where teams just wanted to beat the Yankees. Fans did not like the Yankees because they were so good, and everybody wanted them to lose. I mean, they're practically in that stratosphere right now. So I think they'll handle the chaos well. When you talk about Freddie or Betts, or Muncy, or all these guys, they're gonna handle the chaos. I would not be concerned with that one bit. They're used to it. They travel that way. When I was with the Cubs, I understand what that feels like to travel in a kind of like a interesting chaotic way, where you know everybody's scrutinizing everything that you do, but you welcome it. You kind of like it. There's energy in that also. So I think the group as a whole is gonna be able to deal with it.
And you know, Joey, we just did a game in Los Angeles, and we asked Dave Roberts about, you know, do you feel it, right? You know, and he said that it's incredible how much they protect the clubhouse, right? He felt very strongly that it wasn't really seeping in that way. So even if you're able to insulate yourself to a certain degree and compartmentalize, I guess, what's your concern for the game? Like the whether baseball as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it has to be answered exactly what did happen, and it has to be presented exactly. No spinning, no spin doctors, no whatever. Jack Ryan time, exactly what did happen, tell us the truth, and then we'll move on from there. But if you want to spin it, and if you want to create this false narrative, then it's just going to create power of its own, and eventually it's going to spin out of control. So I would think that a straight up answer to all this is absolutely vital and necessary. Then, I said it earlier, I just think a deep dive into the sporting culture that we've created throughout. I mean, it comes right down to lottery tickets. Like, I'll walk into different places, stopping to get my gas on the way up from Florida, stop at a gas station. You see people in there that you know are not well off, and they're just dumping money on tickets in a hope that they're going to win some money. So like we're you know, regardless of, then you see these really disingenuous disclaimers, you know, about not betting and going, making sure that you're responsible with your betting. Wow, that, come on, you got to be kidding me that that's our conclusion or answer legalizing this thing to the point where it's so easy to do. And that it's been bothering me. Listen, this isn't just this. I read about some reporters and writers will write the same kind of a thing. And I know that what I'm saying right now is not popular among professional sports, and that's fine. But this is what I believe in. I don't believe it's good. And I grew up in a city right over the hill here. There was a lot of illegal betting for years in back rooms of bar rooms and whatever. And it just was the way of the world. But it wasn't easy to do, and not everybody can do it. There was a certain element involved that you're not going to get attached to it. But everybody could get attached to this easily without any kind of ramifications. So I don't like it. Quite frankly, I don't like it.
Okay, so I guess here's my question in response to that. Is it too late now to put that yolk back in the egg? You know what I mean? We're so far down the road. Like, let's just think about baseball, okay?
Yeah.
If you're thinking about baseball, the business, it's all about revenue streams. Mm-hmm. We're about to live in a world where the regional sports network revenue stream, I don't know if it's going to be defunct, it's going to be broken, it's going to be hurting, it's not going to be the same. What's the biggest revenue stream in the sport moving forward? I think it's betting. And it creates interest, it creates ad dollars, big signs all over the parks. There's sports books either inside ballparks or right outside the ballpark gates. What do you think baseball should do to keep it from going too far down that road?
Yeah, Joel Sherman wrote something. I'm going to paraphrase, but he wrote the other day, and I actually texted him, that in order for betting to remain an option, that they need to know that the game is legitimate, or people need to know that the game is legitimate in order for people to want to bet. So if you have any kind of doubt whatsoever that the game is being fixed or whatever, then that makes betting going away. Because why would you bet on something that is not, in a sense, pure? So I've not liked this from the beginning. I don't know what the option is. Yeah, you can't put the yolk back in the egg. It's not going away. This is just me popping off right now, and I get it. And I've gotten in trouble for this before, but I'm just telling you what I think. And I just can't agree, because others are doing it, and they're going to try to present – they're going to give you the execute talk why it's important. I mean, I'm over that, right? So I would love somehow to see it capped in a way, or diminished in a way, made more diminutive and not so easy, in order to really prevent gambling becoming so questionable that even gamblers don't want to gamble anymore.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's move away from this. You're watching the Angels from afar without Shohei. Okay, so Mike Trout homers on opening day, and then his team gets beat up in Baltimore 11-3, and could certainly be another one of those years for the Angels. I know Mike is a loyal guy. I know he's very aware that his hero, Mickey Mantle, spent his whole career with one team. But could you see Mike Trout reaching the point where he would ever ask the Angels to trade him?
First of all, that's not his nature. I mean, he's not the kind of guy that's going to walk in there and demand things. Because even when you hear him talk about his request that he made during the offseason, there's always a disclaimer at the end of it. You know, so he's not that guy. And we've talked about this. He grew up a couple hours from me. He grew up in the same kind of environment that I did. And it's hard to be demanding. We just aren't cut that way. We have parents, and we have family and friends and teachers that pretty much always, if you got too big for your britches, people kind of brought you down a little bit and put you back in your place. So that's just not part of who he is. So I don't see that happening. However, I think it would be very advantageous to the Angels to do something like that. If there's a trade partner out there that wants to give them, a group of players that they actually really do like, I see nothing wrong with it. I really don't. I think as they move into the season right now, how the season progresses, I would keep that open. And I would almost bet that at some point, Perry and Artie have to have a conversation with Michael and let him know that this is a potentiality during the course of the year. which doesn't really, it could lend to less than performance because you're, as a player, you're thinking about a whole bunch of different things, but I still think it's a necessary conversation.
Well, of course, there's one more element to it. He's got something like $260 million left on his contract, which runs through 2030. So how would that part of it work?
It's going to have to be. I mean, the Angels have to pick something up. There's no question. It's have to weigh the value of sucking up some of that in return for the players that you're going to get, and how much do you think they are going to impact your team over the next several years on the major league level. I mean, that's got a, there's a lot of good scouting involved with that. But you have to do that at some point. So if you pay half of that, you're still saving half of that over that time. You're getting players that you like, not unlike what the Mets did. I mean, what the Mets just did with Scherzer and Verlander, the things that they did last year, right? I mean, that's – so there's creative ways to get this done. But just saying, man, I'd love to see Michael get a chance to play on a team that is going to play consistently at the end of the year. I think in the back of his mind, he would love to do that also. However, he's not going to say it.
Well, John, I don't know if you have a relationship with Ron Washington. And I guess, you know, what did it mean to you to see him kind of, you know, at the helm in Anaheim or L.A., Los Angeles of Anaheim? Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, I don't know if there was any exchange along those lines with Ron, but also what like advice you would give him going into the, you know, the sort of community and culture around that ball team.
Well, I did not speak with Wash, although Wash and I have really, we've been friendly for a long time. Even a couple of years ago, there was a big, big flood in New Orleans during the hurricane. His home was absolutely devastated, and I was in touch with him there. And he lost a car that was very dear to him in that time, so and I'm a car guy. So we had kept in touch with that. And as, you know, career minor league grunts, too, we've been conversing for years. So I didn't really have that. And he's fine. I mean, he doesn't need me. Took two teams to a World Series. She doesn't need my advice. I mean, the biggest thing there is to speak his mind, absolutely speak his mind, which I think he has, and really just attack it the way I think he has to, and it's in a pure baseball way. I mean, I think they got a little bit too analytical out there, and I think it's part of his attraction, actually, and I think Perry recognized that. So he's there, and I think he's going to provide a balance between the two, although if the scale was going to weigh one way or the other, the scale is definitely going to weigh in the baseball sense and not in the mathematical sense. And then again, to, you know, with Artie, I mean, just a big part of that is Artie and his weighing in on different issues, with, right down to the roster alignment and how you're going to acquire people, whether you can or cannot. And that's something that Wash really cannot, but that's a big part of that culture out there.
So if I'm counting right, Wash is one of eight new managers this year. Mm-hmm. Eight. Am I correct in thinking that not one of those eight teams reached out to you last winter? Because that's amazing to me. Tell me why you think that is.
Part of it is what we're talking about right now. I'm not afraid to kind of say what I think. I don't think I'm attractive in that regard. I don't think I'm as controllable as some of these other guys are. I think in the baseball world today, for the most part, front offices want people that they feel will unequivocally follow exactly what they want them to do, which obviously I would also, but you can also hear my side of things too. So I just think that, again, I'm not as controllable as others. Boach goes to Texas and CY gives him an open berth, and it turned out pretty well right there. Who else? I mean, somebody else got.
I mean, look at the last three managers to win the World Series.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Brochi, Dusty,
mm-hmm.
Brian Snicker.
Yeah, Snick. That's right. Yeah. And I know with the Atlanta, there's really a nice morphing of old and new school there. So again, it's just the way front offices work right now. There's a lot of conversation among each one of them. I think, you know, when I left, the fact that I did conclude exactly what I thought would happen with the Angels, I think that was not met well by different front offices, interpreted in a way that I'm not cooperative, which is not true. Anybody that's ever been around me knows that I am, and I am, I hate the word progressive, but I am kind of like that, new ideas, new thoughts, trying to do different things. But I think I present a balance. I don't know if ageism is a part of that. I don't think so, because I really believe I'm a lot younger than a lot of these executives. I really do. So I just think it's a controllable asset or not. I don't think I'm as controllable on the surface as some of these other guys appear to be.
So if you're not going to manage again, which is a loss for the sport, are you good with that in your mind?
Yeah, I am. I let me see if I could present this properly. I'd like to do it again, but am I good with it if I don't? Yes. I'll tell you, I'm doing like, I just did MLB Network with Brian Kenny, just the once a week, but it's really a lot of fun. He keeps me connected. And the podcast with Verducci once a week. Tommy does a great job of setting the show up and keeps me connected again. And then talking to people like you. And there's, I got other little irons in the fire a little bit that I really can't talk about right now that's keeping me connected too. I would never be opposed to working in somebody's front office and trying to be a sounding board for a lot of different things. Get out and scout teams. I love the minor leagues. You know, things like that would be very interesting to me too. And it, I think maybe the perception is that all I want to do is manage, happily do other things, happily, if you're working with the right group and they really want you. Somebody's got to really want you. If somebody, I would never call and try to force myself in or try to convince somebody I'm the right guy for the job. You got to know that in advance or not. That's how I work. And I always did. Even when I got my first job, I'm walking out of Fenway Park. I don't know what year it was. I was still a bench coach. Tommy Tanzer, my agent at that time, comes walking the other way. And Tommy says to me, when are you going to start managing? And I said, Tommy, when somebody asks me, you know, that's exactly how it came about. So listen, I have not lost any desire, energy, whatever. Actually, I think I have as much as at any point in my life. The difference would be that I think my thoughts are really clear or clearer. And, but it's got to be with the group that really understands the balance between both, you know, meaning the heartbeat and the data. And, that would be interesting. I think it would really be interesting working with the right group.
What about like, you know, Bobby Valentine? Would you consider like managing abroad? Would that be something really interesting to you?
I was offered right away after I was let go by the Angels. I got some offers very quickly, but I I like where I live. I like where I'm at in Pennsylvania. I got my family here. I like my existence. I like getting up when I want to. To do that in another country, I just wasn't a mentally desirable thought. So no, the answer is no, I don't really want to do that right now. I would do it here, but I wouldn't do it there.
So before we let you go, why don't you tell people what you have been doing with your time?
Yeah, well, I've had back surgery, so I'm getting off of a laminectomy. I'm 5 weeks in, and I was just out there the other day, yesterday, as a matter of fact, just chipping from 50 yards, which is like, it felt great, and putting a little bit. So I've been playing some golf. Again, the podcast and the podcast and the thing with the MLB Network. And I'm also my home here. I love my place here. I love my place here in Pennsylvania, in Sugarloaf, Cunningham Valley, putting a room addition on. And I'm kind of like orchestrating all of this with the room addition, interior decorator, including a greenhouse, buying plants to plant. I love that stuff, but I've always loved that stuff. So I bought a firehouse up in Wilkes-Barre, which is like 25 minutes away, using it as a garage for my cars. And that's also my warehouse. And I want to start fixing that up. So I paint it a little bit and then put all the memorabilia on the walls to make it somewhat attractive. And maybe at some point charge a small admission to go to the my foundation. So I got all these things going on. My mom's right up the hill in a home up the hill here. She's sister living. She's doing great. My sister's over there. So it's pretty good. You know, I've kind of built a life on just not being totally dependent upon baseball or sports in general. So I think right now it's kind of benefiting me a bit.
Joe, you sound good, man. And it's always special to visit with you. We appreciate it more than ever today. So thank you. Hit them straight if the sun ever comes out in Hazelwood.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right?
No kidding.
Go ahead.
And everything I just said is April Fool's, by the way.
Right. No, it's not.
No, I'm just kidding. Not April Fool's.
All right. Hey, listen, man, thank you so much for joining us in Starkville. You're welcome anytime, with or without your GPS.
Well, just call me, man. I'm good. This is good for me. Keeps me mentally active and alert, and I really do dig it. I mean that sincerely. Thank you.
Strange but true.
Baseball is back. So is our Strange but True segment, also back. And we love this segment so much, we've moved it up in the show. So there will be trivia still to come. But first, we have epic strangeness that we need to dive into, like we will do every week now through the season. And the great thing about this one, Doug, is we didn't have to wait long for this particular strange but true madness to break out. This was opening day, Thursday in Arizona. Kyle Freeland goes out to pitch for the Rockies. And Doug, how'd that go? Right? He was
not too well.
Not that good, right? Yeah. So he was down 2-0 after six pitches. And that was actually the best part of his day. Okay. Because in the third inning, this happened.
Alec shoots it down the right field line. Gino's on the move. Gabby's home to make it 8-1. Alec Thomas with the RBI double off the left-hander. And the Diamondbacks have opened things up. Kyle Freeland will not survive the third in his opening day start. That'll work. Doyle will play it on the bounce. Blaze Alexander has his first major league hit. And it's 16-1 Diamondbacks.
14 runs in one inning. And does that seem hard, Doug? It seems hard to me. Okay,
that's pretty tricky. Yeah, what's the pace for a 9-inning game? That's charity to 326 runs in a game. That would be amazing.
It seems like a lot. Yeah,
it's a lot.
So here's how that inning went, just so you get a full picture of how crazy it was. Okay, so it's 2-1 game. Kyle Freeland comes out to pitch, and here's how it goes: single, single. Walk, single, double, single, single, fly ball that advances a runner, double, and then Bud Black had seen enough. So they brought in Anthony Molina to relieve him. Here's how his day goes: single, single, walk, single, single, double, sack fly, single, out he goes. What an inning. Oh, my God. So let's talk about 14 runs in an inning. It's the most ever allowed by any team in any inning in the history of opening day. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's because it's the fourth most runs allowed in any inning in any game since 1900. I started messing around with this. So, okay, this team gives up 14 in the first game in an inning. Do you know the Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals, the football team? They only have one game all year where they gave up 14 in the first quarter. They won three games all year. So like, it's hard to do this. But here's the thing. None of this is even the strange but true part. The strange but true part is Kyle Freeland gave up 10 earned runs in this game and only got seven outs. Okay. So the good news is he's not the first pitcher to give up 10 runs on opening day. Found 15 other pitchers in the modern era who did that. But did you know, Doug, that of all those pitchers who did that, nobody got fewer outs than he did? He only got seven outs and gave up 10. So he came out of this game with an ERA of 38.57. Is that a good way to start your year? It doesn't seem that good. And yet, here's the strangest part. He didn't even emerge from that game or even that inning with the highest ERA on his team because, we mentioned this, the guy relieved him, Anthony Molina, no relation to Yadi or Benji as far as I know, by the way. He came in and he gave up six runs and only got one out. So his ERA after opening day was 1.62. Not 1.62. 1.62.00. 1.62 ERA. Doug, that seems kind of high to me. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Well, when you match the number of games you play in a season and your ERA, it's not working out too well. It's just not where you want to be.
No, it's really not. No. Yeah, it takes a long time to, like, when you give up six in opening day, think how many months it takes to get your ERA down to being respectable. So, Doug, you experienced a lot of opening days in the big leagues. This one got me to thinking. What was the worst opening day for you and your team?
Well, you know, the first thing I just want to address is the theory that I have about the Colorado Rockies. You know, sometimes you're having a bad day and it's always described or shown as a black cloud kind of following you. I found out in this Colorado situation with the 14 runs, it is possible that you could actually carry the altitude from Denver with you. That's your cloud. And sometimes right. If you bring the altitude with you, you're going to give up 14 runs in an inning because that's what the altitude does in Colorado. So just, you know, just a theory, but, you know, the humidor clearly didn't work. And Arizona all of a sudden became a mile high. And that just explained it. So he could blame it on the weather. I think that's completely reasonable. But he had this, instead of a cloud following him, he had the Rocky Mountains following him. And the elevation just got to him. So
where do they keep the mountains inside that dome there?
Well, they have to keep the roof open for that, clearly.
I recommend it, yep.
So in that case, it fits beautifully out there. And then that purple line that they have with Mile High, where Chipper Jones, I think, hit it up there one day. Yeah, they just changed the color to like burnt orange or whatever it is over there.
Okay, before you tell your story, though, I want you to think about this. The Rockies give up 14 runs in an inning for the first time in the history of their franchise and did not do it at Coors Field. What are the odds of that?
Yes. Baseball's if you can't so do it in Coors Field, you'll bring Coors Field to you.
That's right. That's what they did. Yeah, for sure. All right, so you're going to tell us about your and your team's worst opening day in your time.
Yeah, I mean, I almost stopped at my worst because I just figured the team had a bad day too. But, you know, because I was so delirious, I don't even know what happened in that game. I think we lost. But unfortunately, I got traded to the Phillies in the offseason between 1997 going into 98. So I get traded, goes really well, great spring training. Lenny Dykstra retires. I'm kind of, you know, hope Lenny's doing well out there. And, you know, so I'm ready to, you know, move on. And I had a great spring. So I'm feeling like, yeah, I'm going to get off to a good start. Well, as every spring training, there's always some illness that goes around camp. The cabin fever, people coming from all over. But in our case, for whatever reason, it hit us late. Normally you get it like, you know, February 27th or March. But literally as we were about to break camp, this like, you know, Puerto Rico called La Monga. It just started this whatever flu went around. And we all just got smoked with it right when we were leaving to go start the season. And I remember we play in the Mets at Shea, and it's, you know, there's like a day off and you're supposed to practice and then we start the season. Well, that day off, I mean, I woke up and I thought I was run over by like 12 different trains. Uh-oh. And I was like, I don't think I can get out of bed. I'm not sure. And you know, I call and I'm like, you know, maybe they can come rescue me. And they're kind of like, all right, we'll try to let you rest and all that. But then, so I missed practice. And it was bad enough that they wanted to take me to the ER because they were worried that dehydration might kick in. So you can tell it's already going pretty bad. So I go to the ER. I'm like dragging. I'm like laying on the, you know, gurney or whatever. And they're giving me intravenous fluids, like IV fluids. Okay. And it's like, this isn't really helping, but, you know, whatever. let's just keep doing this, right? So I drag out of there. I just like, all right, I try to like sleep. And then, and I think it was like a day game. So I didn't have a lot of time to recover. And some guys had the same thing, but they kind of bounced back. And I just got hit right when opening day. It was the peak or the valley of this thing. So I am dragging. I'm, you know, that cold sweat, you know, just like, I don't know what temperature I am. I could be on the sun. I could be on Pluto, whatever. It feels the same. And so I don't know if Bobby Jones, I don't know, but I literally go 0-for-6, and if we played a doubleheader, if we played 35 innings, it would have been 0-for as many at-bats as I got up there. I mean, it felt like the bat was like, why is this bat so heavy? I can't even pick it up. I mean, I had no chance. I was, you know, but I was like, well, I got to play, you know, had this good spring, and I mean, it was horrible. So, you know, nothing worse than not only being sick, going 0-for-6, your debut with the team that after hitting like 400 in spring and they'll beat out Lenny Dykstra, and everybody loved Lenny. So they're like questioning, like, why did we get this guy? You know, I mean, it was a nightmare. It was a total nightmare. And I had a horrible April. But fortunately, I faced Al Leiter, if you're out there, Al, a guy later I found out that I just, for some reason, I just hit really well. So the next day I got a couple hits and I was like, all right, I'm, you know, felt a little better. So I'm sure we lost that game. I'm assuming we did. And I just crawled into bed and just tried to recover. But man, that was awful. So that was opening day. Yo, welcome to Philadelphia. Good luck with your intravenous fluids.
All right, it's that time again. It's time for listener trivia. So Doug, it's our first trivia question of the 2024 regular season. But before we get rolling here, I need to get a ruling from you because you're the one that hands down the rulings when we need this sort of thing. Here's the question, okay? So we had a huge trivia streak going, the greatest streak in sports. We had not gone through a calendar month of trivia without getting at least one question right since the end of 2022. Mm. But then last month, we only had one show, right? So in that show, we got the question wrong. Mm-hmm. So does that mean our streak is still alive? Like, I don't personally see how it is. But since you're the inventor of numerous devious cheating schemes, I thought you might have some thoughts.
Well, I figured it's a leap year. So I think that gives us an extra day. So as long as we do it by April 1st, which, oh my goodness, it happens to be today when we're recording. That would seem like that would, you know, count as March.
So it's actually March 32nd then? That's your story? March 30th. Okay. It's March 32nd. Well, all right. Whether we're still streaking or not, I do know this. We have a really fun question this week. It's baseball season. It's the week of the Final Four. Why would we not take a stab at a question that involves both of those things, right?
Yeah, I love it.
So, this week's special trivia guest star has a question right up that alley, Doug.
Yes.
Let's bring him in. It's Michael Nearly. Michael, yes. Welcome to Starkville. It's your first visit, am I right?
That is.
All right. Love debuts. All right.
So, Doug, I don't know if you noticed it, but Michael, his Twitter name, his X name, it's Reds World Series or Bust. Should I take that to mean you're a Reds fan?
I am. I grew up as a kid in the early 70s, so the Big Red Machine was running around, so that's where I started my fandom.
Uh-huh. Oh, nice. And are you from Cincinnati, from Ohio?
No, I'm actually from Joplin, Missouri.
Okay, so you're spurning the Cardinals for the Big Red Machine still.
Absolutely.
Okay, we won't let that get around. Oh, wait. Listen, I think the Reds are really exciting here in 2024. But you know what, Michael? So is your question. So let's do this. Give us your question, then we'll thrash around, and we'll probably get it wrong.
Okay, so there have been two people this has happened to, so bonus points if you can get the second one.
Oh, really?
But my question is, who was the first player to play in a Final Four and also a World Series?
All right, we're going to do this, but just people listening out there should know there's something special about to take place. For the first time in Starkville trivia history, we now have a clock. We have a pitch clock in baseball. We now have a trivia clock. Okay, so here we go. Let's start the clock. We have 4 minutes to get this one right. Let's start the clock and go. All right, first one is Dick Groat. National League MVP, 1960 Pirates, won the World Series, but also played basketball for Duke, even broadcast Duke games for like 50 years. Okay, so let's put him aside. Uh-huh. Then another one is Tim Stoddard. I know he did both. He played basketball at NC State, I believe in the David Thompson years when they were great. Ooh. And he pitched for the 1979 Orioles in the World Series. So both those two feel like they're an answer. All right. But I was also thinking about Kenny Lofton. Yep. You know, he played basketball. Was it Arizona State? Okay, and then we know he got to the World Series with Cleveland. But he would be after those two. So, okay, so unless I'm missing something, I think our choices should come down to Dick Rote or Tim Stoddard, or the bonus points, we could guess them both, I guess. I mean, Dick Rote obviously played in the World Series before Tim Stoddard, but I don't know if he actually played in the Final Four at Duke.
Duke, yeah. So,
Doug, I don't know. What do you think? Did I miss anybody?
Well, you know, Dave Winfield, I guess. You know, I don't know. Did he, you know, he was a Minnesota and...
Let's see. He did play in the World Series, right?
Eventually, to Toronto.
Minnesota and Toronto. I think he did.
Yeah, right? Twins.
Okay, so he did get to the World Series. I mean, would have got the Yankees, too, or actually in the 80s. That's a good guess.
Well, I remember this list before in my head a little bit, like Jackie Robinson, UCLA. I don't think he got to the Final Four, though. But Bob Gibson played at Creighton, right?
He did. I do not believe he got to the Final Four.
Okay. So, I mean, Lofton, Winfield, Groot, Stoddard, I mean, those are good answers. And you said the first one. And we get, what, two guesses? And so if we get two guesses with two answers, right? One is a bonus and one is, I don't know. I mean, it seems like, yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I know the clock is ticking down. And the more we talk, the chances of us talking ourselves out of the right answer are really high, as we usually do. So, like, I would vote for going chronological order here, right?
Yeah, I like that idea.
Dick Rote, and then Tim Stoddard is the bonus guess. Are you good with that?
I'm good with that because I think it's he said first. That was the key because I don't know if Lofton, and I saw Kenny Lofton literally the other day, so should have asked him. Oh, well.
Right.
Let's just go in chronological order because I think those are great guesses. And I know Tim Stoddard, I remember he coached at Northwestern and all that stuff.
Yeah. So. Okay. So let's do our best to guess before the buzzer starts sounding, and that'll never happen again. Let's do it now. Okay. So, Michael, is there any chance it's Dick Rote with Tim Stoddard as the bonus guess?
Dick Rote is incorrect.
Oh, really?
Tim Stoddard was the first, and I believe Kenny Lofton's old teammate in Chicago Doug Glanville's old teammate in Chicago for a bit was Kenny Lofton was the other.
Yeah.
All right, so let's think about this. We kind of got it right.
We got, Tim Stoddard, got the bonus, I guess.
Somebody needs to give us a ruling. Did we get this right or not? I don't even know anymore.
So the actual question was the first, so you got that wrong. So you got the bonus guess with your second guess, which was actually the first. So I would say it's wrong.
So we got all the names, but we didn't get it right. Only we could do this. Okay. I knew Tim Stoddard was the answer, and then we just talked ourselves out of it.
That was a good guess. I mean, Kalo, I just saw him, but he wasn't the first, so, you know. All right. That was, I love it. That was a very Stark villain right there. Get an answer, not get it right, but be right in spirit.
Spirit of the night. Okay, well, whatever. It was a cool and timely question, and now here comes the best news. The best part of the segment is coming up now. And as you know, that's the part that doesn't include us. Okay, it's the part where we bring in the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, to play another sensational play-by-play clip involving this week's answer. And the really fun part of this one is, Tim, you have two different sports as options for your clip. So what did you come up with?
That is a good point. But this is a baseball show, so we're going to stick to baseball. But I still think this is interesting because, as you said, Tim Stoddard was a pitcher who pitched for the Baltimore Orioles. But in that 1979 World Series, he also came through with a big RBI single at the plate, something you would never see happen these days. So here's Tim Stoddard getting it done with the bat.
Still only one out and runners at second and third, and he stays with Stoddard. Tim Stoddard up for the first time in 79. Bouncer by Madlock through the drawn-in infield. That'll score a run. Crowley stops at third, and it's 8-6.
I don't believe it.
Incredible.
I don't believe it.
American League pitcher at that. Oh my gosh.
Right. So we gave Tim the opportunity to play a clip of Tim Stoddard pitching or making a hoop in the final four. And what did he do? He played a clip of a relief pitcher for an American League team getting a hit.
That's Starkville. That's the proper call.
That's true. Absolutely the right call.
Yeah. off the grid, that's us. Okay. So, Tim, great job. Michael, we loved your question. Please come back and visit us again in Starkville, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Okay, that's going to do it for this week's show. So, Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Joe Madden for visiting us. Thanks to Michael Nerley for the great trivia question. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you next week
on Starkville.